Bears Roundtable is powered by Xfinity.
Hi again, everybody, and welcome to Chicago Bears Roundtable here at PNC Studio at Hallis Hall. Jeff Joniak along with my broadcast partner, Tom Thayer, from News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM, WBBM, the senior writer of ChicagoBears.com, Larry Mayer. He's always a book of knowledge, ladies and gentlemen, and a Hall of Fame writer extraordinaire. The NFL was proud to have him cover the beat for so many years on various stages and various mediums, and certainly covering the Chicago Bears for many years, and a member of the Canton crowd, the great Dan Pompey, joining us. Thanks for taking the time to join us today. But now I don't know if you know this, fellas, but he's got his own website now. So now he's big time. DanPompey.net.
He's been big time before that website.
DanPompey.net.
The website just gave him another way to be bigger time.
Let me tell you, the more you guys talk, the more credibility you lose. So I would stop while you're ahead. Let's start talking about the team.
Seriously, about some good things. We've got to give you some pub here. Tell us about DanPompey.net.
Yeah, DanPompey.net is a website where you could kind of find all my work. I'm doing a lot of writing these days for Bleacher Report, a lot of different features. I've got one coming out next week on Russell Wilson. Spent some time with him out in Seattle recently. Actually, this week I'm going out to Washington to spend some time with Kirk Cousins. So I'm doing a lot of different features on the league. And then also I've got a lot of different broadcast things going. I'm on WSCR on the pregame show and doing different things for them, doing Pro Football Weekly on TV. And my website is kind of a place where you could find everything that I'm doing in case you were very confused.
A little clearinghouse for info.
You know, Earlier this year, Jeff, and Patrick Manley did a thing down at the draft downtown, and the draft is coming back. Are you a veteran guy or are you a rookie guy now that you're a writer? Where do the stories take you more?
Well, I would say probably more veteran. I think there are good stories to be had in both areas. I don't know that... the draft obviously is not something that's heated up just yet, so I haven't put a lot of resources into that just yet, but I hope to as time goes on and really brush up on that. I know it's going to be a really exciting draft for the Bears because they have so many needs and so many different ways they can go.
And nine picks, which is a great start. Maybe they get more.
I was just going to say they could add to that, but Dan impresses me because when I started covering the Bears way back when in 1992, Dan was already on the beat with the Sun-Times, and he was one of those guys that, not to make him embarrass, or that I looked up to him and Fred Mitchell. And, yeah.
We don't anymore, but we did then.
You know, I loved his work ethic and the fact that he always had a good time, had fun.
I'm only 5'8". How did you look up to me?
I did. I don't know, but both of us, when we first came in, how tall are you? Both of us, we covered this guy.
How about that?
Right, yeah. Absolutely.
Well, don't point at me. That just makes me seem and sound old. But when you cover sports... You know, how have things changed? Because I remember you on the sidelines standing there at Platteville, and now you're there on the sidelines sitting up in the bleachers in Kankakee or standing around. How has it been throughout your career in terms of that type of coverage?
Yeah, it's a good question, and I'd actually like to hear your thoughts on this, too. I think the media really has changed drastically in the time that I've been in the game, in the 30 years that I've been around it. It's grown just substantially, and I think way back when it was – a lot easier to get to know people, to connect with people, to get access with people. And it's become a lot more difficult now because of the so many demands on the media. Another thing, too, I mean, teams have their own websites now, as anyone who is watching this knows. And
very happy about that.
and that's another form of competition, though, in the media. Right. And, since I've got involved in this, ESPN has come on the scene. And, I mean, that's like the biggest thing out there for media now. That didn't exist back when we were starting.
Can you imagine if there was social media for the 85 Bears in terms of Instagram?
No, I cannot.
I mean, that team would have been amazing.
My question, does it make it more difficult? Because it seems like a lot of players want to break their own stories on Twitter and the different avenues they have. And before, the only way a story would be broken would be talking to Jeff or Larry or Dan or – You know the guys across the years.
I think he raised a great point. What would it have been like for your team? Because it might have impacted their level of success also. Who knows what would have come out?
It could have.
Honestly, it could have caused
What do you think, Tom, about how the media has changed? What are your thoughts?
I don't know. It seems like there's times that they want to be a little bit more vindictive. If they hear something negative, they want to capitalize on that.
Yes.
And they want to grow that into a headline. But I think... there's a great way to hear some unbelievable stories about great accomplishments of these guys have struggled through for their life. And if the players attach to it in a positive, then they can really enhance their brand because of what they've overcome. But I like to promote the positive, and I don't like to dwell on the negatives that you kind of see hashed over so many times nowadays.
Being a veteran scribe like you are, I think fans would be really interested to find out that Dan is one of the guys, I think there's 44, is that right?
Yes.
44 people that are the people that vote for the Hall of Famers. Every city in the NFL is represented. Dan represents Chicago. And I just take us into that room because it's got to be just fascinating, because when there's a Chicago player up like Richard Dent, you have to present the case, right? So what exactly is that like in that room, and how does it take place? Are guys saying, hey, if you vote for my guy, I vote for your guy? Or what's that like?
No, I mean, you know, you don't want it to be that way. You don't want it to be a political process. You want it to be a process that is true and that's fair and honest. I think, you know, sometimes it can feel a little bit like maybe a, you know, House of Representatives meeting or a Senate meeting. But, you know, there's a lot of good, hardworking people in that room with a lot of knowledge who put a lot into that day in that process in trying to get the best players possible. And it's not easy, let me tell you that. That's, I think, the biggest misconception is that, you know, it's an easy process. You go in there with, you know, these preconceived notions in your mind, and you say, yeah, these guys, this guy, that. And then afterwards, everyone says, well, why didn't you get him in? Why? Everyone's got a different guy. Why didn't you get him in?
Right.
You know why? Because there's a lot of really good candidates every year, and it's so tough.
How much responsibility did you feel getting Denton? I mean, all the Bear fans want him in, and he didn't get in right away for the few several years. And I mean, did you feel that was your responsibility?
I mean, I didn't really feel it was all on me, but yes, I felt pressured, and I felt very bad when he did, the few times he did not get in after I presented his case, and I felt at some point that I kind of failed a little bit and must have done something wrong, you know, because I felt like his numbers and his resume was so strong that to me he was a slam dunk, and I thought it took too long to get him in.
Who's next on your list?
Well, we've been talking about Jay Hilgenberg. Tom and I have been talking about him this year, as a matter of fact, and he is not among the finalists.
Why is that, Dan? He never seems to get the consideration. This is a guy that, correct me if I'm wrong, started 7 straight Pro Bowls and was not only a Pro Bowler, but was an All-Pro 5 times, which basically means he was the best player at his position in the NFL for 5 years.
Yeah, I don't have a good answer for you, because I think he should. He definitely should be a guy that we're discussing. The only thing I could tell you is he's a center. It's tough for centers. I could tell you that there's a lot of really good offensive linemen who get passed over because they're offensive linemen. They don't have statistics. It's always difficult to compare a wide receiver to an offensive lineman, for instance, a defensive end to an offensive lineman, just because offensive linemen don't have the same kind of numbers and the same kind of notoriety oftentimes.
How should they be quantified?
You know, it's frustrating to me because Dermoni Dawson's in the Hall of Fame from the Pittsburgh Steelers, who's a great player. But he gets credit for doing something as the first center in the NFL where Jay was doing it long before him in terms of a pulling center who was athletic enough to snap the ball and get out in space and lead a sweep upfield. And there's evidence of Jay doing it years before they give Dermoni Dawson credit for being that center. That's the frustrating thing of older players who pay attention to the younger players that are getting ready to make it to the Hall of Fame. But I don't know. I don't think there's a great deal of players that are good enough to get Hall of Fame consideration. There's a lot of great players in the NFL, but it is that special upper echelon of players that should get consideration and that should be inside the conversation of making the Hall of Fame.
I got two questions for you.
Go ahead.
Is Brian Urlacher a first ballot Hall of Famer, and is Devin Hester a Hall of Famer?
I don't know to either question. You know, I can't really foresee those things right now. I think Urlacher's got a strong case to be a first ballot Hall of Famer. One of the things that I think might work against him is he's going to be eligible the same year that Ray Lewis is eligible.
Why? They're both great players.
I agree.
I agree. That's the same argument that's come up since they both retired at the same time.
I'm not telling you I would vote against him or
right.
I would not vote for him because of that. I'm just saying I wonder if it will work against him because, you know, maybe his resume isn't quite as stellar as Ray Lewis's is in the eyes of some voters. I think that could be an
if
issue.
If Urlacher came out and danced before every introduction, he would be on that pedestal of consideration because there's – there's a lot of similarities between their abilities, but you know they're built differently, and they're both great football players.
Both great football. They're both Hall of Famers. They'll both get in. You know, I think that's one of the things about the process that is a little difficult. You know, everyone can't get in right away. It takes time. And one of the things that we talk about as voters sometimes is trying to keep guys in queue. So, for instance, you know, if Jeff Joniak has been eligible for 10 years and, you know, he was a really good defensive tackle, and then Tom Thayer comes along as a first-year eligible defensive tackle, you know, we should take care of this guy first before we start talking about that guy.
Because they can get lost in
the in the shuffle. Yeah. That's what happens. And they end up like Dick Stanfield, for instance. He's a great example of a guy. He was the MVP of the entire NFL in, I think, 1957. And, you know, great player for many years. Never got consideration. Ended up falling through the cracks and going to the seniors committee. Well, the seniors committee nominated him a couple times, still didn't get in. He's nominated again a third time this year, and we're finally hoping to get him in.
And what about Hester?
Hester's a good question, too. You know, probably the greatest return man of all time. However, there are no return men in the Hall of Fame. So it's going to be an interesting conversation. What I have said is I think he could knock it out of the park if he had another really great season. You know, if he had another 3-touchdown season with a great average and all that. I don't know if he's got that in him at this point because it seems like he might be nearing the end. But, you know, if he is in the Hall of Fame, I think Jeff Joniak should be the guy.
Don't be ridiculous.
Don't be ridiculous.
Wow, he gets that in.
I got it in. All right, one of your recent articles, and I think it is your latest article, the headline certainly grabs your attention, Death, Hollywood, and the Duersons' Complicated Relationship with Football. Can you tell us what the angle of the story was? It's tied to the release of the movie Concussion.
Yeah, well, it's been nearly 5 years now since Dave Duerson took his life, and we wanted to kind of take a look at... We didn't go into it saying, let's look at the Duerson family, but we looked at it. We went into it saying, let's look at a family that has struggled with the after effects of concussions and problems from perhaps CTE, and... the Duerson family ended up being a perfect family to talk to. Of course, I covered Dave as a player. I wrote about him when he killed himself. I've covered their lawsuit, different things. So I'm very familiar with their entire case, and I know Treg and Alicia and the family, and was able to connect with them and talk a little about their struggles in the past 5 years, emotionally, personally, even, you know, financially, all the things that have happened as a result of their father and Alicia's ex-husband taking his life.
What was your takeaway in the final analysis?
Well, I think, you know, they're still struggling with it. I think it's something that they'll probably struggle with forever. It's not something that's easily come to terms with for anyone. I mean, it's always difficult to lose someone. It's especially difficult to lose someone at the age that Dave Duerson took his life, and then in addition to that, you look at the circumstances of suicide and the fact that he got in the state that he was in as a result of head trauma. So it's a very disturbing story, but I think it's an important story for a lot of people to understand and read and have knowledge of.
And this January 26th, the 30th anniversary of the Super Bowl team, when we get together, everybody will be reminded of the guys who aren't here as much as talking to the guys who
and
are
And you were
here.
His roommate in college, so you obviously have some unique perspective. Also, and is it troubling for you to hear everything tied in? And he's one of the focal points in this movie, right? I mean, he's a subject in this movie. Is it very hard for you as a friend and teammate and
yeah,
somebody
because,
you're close to?
You know, I remember Dave from 17 years old. I remember Dave as one of the most confident young men I've ever met in my life. He's tremendously talented in multiple sports as a musician. He's accomplished so much, so it is disappointing to see the way that they refer to Dave now, and I've read a bunch of articles about it, and it's sad for me because I remember the great qualities of Dave Duerson, and that's what I'll always bring with me. Unfortunately, everybody can be painted in a negative way nowadays in the world, and I feel bad that this is the reflection of Duerson that's coming out of the movie.
Well, I'd like to ask all three of you what you guys think about the whole CTE thing and what's going on with the concussion movie and where we're going as a sport with this.
Well, it's not like we don't have conversations about it. Just, you know, even on the plane, going to games or in the booth. And it's hard to take a position on it because it's not going to be popular either way. You know, it's almost like it's better to not have an opinion on it. But I just need, I guess for me personally, a bigger body of research. You know, on the guys and why is it affecting allegedly some guys and not a greater population of past NFL players. So I guess that's where it begins and ends with me personally.
I would defer to someone like you, Tom, who played the game for so long at a high level, especially the offensive line. Everybody always talks about concussions in terms of somebody going over the middle and getting hit hard. But someone like you were banging heads basically every play in training camp all those weeks and all those years and also in games. I mean, I would like to know what you think about the whole situation. And is there a player that ever says, if I knew now what I knew then, I wouldn't play? It seems like everybody would still play.
I think the process, I'm glad there's just continuous amounts of education, people being educated, families being educated, moms being educated, and the young kids. And I think I'm glad it trickles down to the fundamentals of the game to make sure that they give these guys the safest opportunity they can growing up and developing and playing the game. But you also have to realize when you're a professional athlete and that's your pursuit, you're going to get paid a lot of money to do a dangerous job. And I think you can't put it aside, but you'll be naive if you don't realize that while you're playing the game. But I think sports is so important for the infrastructure of our society, and they teach so many lessons to kids. If you don't play football, you have a better option, you have a better sport, then take advantage of it, because losing sight of the importance of sports in our society is really dangerous. So, my dad worked 43 years outdoors every day of his life climbing electric poles. You know, you got to pick your opportunity. And for me, knowing that, you know, my body is sore and other things, I would still play football as my pursuit. And I think that's everybody's going to come to a point in their life where they're going to pursue sport or another option, another opportunity in their life. And football for me was the greatest opportunity that I could have taken advantage of. It educated me through college, and it got me into a professional opportunity as an adult.
Yeah, multiple careers in the same sport for Tom Thayer. Absolutely. All right, let's switch gears and talk about the team. 2016 is in the offing, as it appears here, as we wind up the season with the Detroit Lions on Sunday. And even though the record doesn't show it, I believe there's some genuine optimism flowing through this team. I hear players talking about how bad they want to be a part of the future. And that's an interesting take given the era of one-year contracts for veteran players. But they like what they see from the guys running the show, from Ryan Pace to John Fox to the assistant coaches who are putting them in position to succeed. And there have been a variety of guys from all different walks of life and different levels of entry into the National Football League in different avenues. So, therefore, it's kind of a melting pot football team right now. I don't know how you feel about what you've seen so far from this group.
I think John Fox has done a fantastic job. I think the assistant coaches, the coordinators, they've all done a fantastic job. And it starts probably with kind of changing the culture and making people accountable and showing good leadership and, you know, getting this team to fight hard in circumstances like last Sunday where you would think they would be probably set to take the rest of the year off. You know, I mean, here they're out of the playoffs. They're missing some of their key players. It's Christmas week. They go down to Tampa. They're playing in the heat, and they come out and they punch them the Bucks in the mouth. I mean, it was a great effort and a great reflection, I think, of the character in the locker room and also the leadership.
You know, I always refer to the last practice of training camp. It was the most physical last practice I've seen around here in probably 20 years. And I think that kind of set the standard of the reason they are a chippy team with great resiliency, because John Fox never let them relax. Up until the day they were driving out of Kankakee, even though Jeff locked his keys in the truck, it was a great tone setter for Coach Fox to the players, going, look, don't think because it's last minute you're off duty. Up until the end, you're on duty, and I think it helps at these types of games at the end of the season.
I think it helps some of these young players who have they're on a mission, some of them, because they didn't like that they were not drafted, overlooked, whatnot, and they've been working hard in practice, and the practice is being evaluated properly and seriously, and they're getting a chance to show themselves.
Well, you know, I love the fact that Fox is willing to take a guy who's been starting and put him on the inactive list, take a guy who's been on the practice squad, put him in the starting lineup, and, you know, change it up week to week
based
on what he sees in practice.
And have the guy also call the signals. And, you know, I mean, in his second NFL game in John Timu, and Harold Jones-Corte was just a monster back there in the first 20 snaps of that game. If you look at the tape again, he was just killing people.
I don't ever remember three undrafted rookies like that making such key plays on the defense to win a game like that. It was just incredible.
It was. It really was. You know, part of this, I think, is a reflection of the fact that you really have a void of playmakers and a void of talent. So you've got kind of a vacuum where opportunity is created because somebody's got to fill that void. And these guys are stepping up and doing it. Now, you know, it's one thing to do it for one game or two games for a short period of time. It's another thing to do it consistently and to develop into a solid NFL player.
How about Jay Cutler? What can you say about him? You know, what people are thinking about him at the beginning of the year to where the entire league thinks about him at the end of the year. It's been an impressive transition he's made.
Yeah, very impressive. You know, I think he's shown great maturity and poise, and he's done things this year that I wasn't sure he could ever do, frankly. I really like the way he has embraced the role of being a game manager, which is something that I think is probably against every fiber in his body. You know, he's a guy who...
Most quarterbacks.
Yes, but I mean, especially him, given, you know, his personality and his skill set. And, you know, he's just done a really good job of taking what has been given to him, following instructions. And I think, you know, he's been put in some really bad situations based on the fact of who has been around
him. I mean, the top three snap wide receivers last week were Mark Mariani, Josh Bellamy, and you got and it was Zach Miller. I mean, those were the three targets.
Yeah.
Those were the top three in terms of snaps in that football game. And, you know, I think he's made guys better.
No question.
And, and they will set, if he does not throw an interception on Sunday, he will set the Bears' single season. The Bears' quarterbacks for the year will set the Bears' single season record for lowest interception percentage in a season at 1.8%.
That's the most amazing thing to me because he always had the great arm, make all the throws, but he'd always have the decision-making where maybe that one pass every game you'd be scratching your head while you threw the ball, and he's completely eliminated that. He's the only quarterback in the NFL that started at least 10 games that hasn't thrown two interceptions in a game, which is really remarkable. And I think
he's on a streak of 15 games doing that.
And, you know, Adam Gase has done a lot for him, and he deserves a lot of credit. But I think Jay deserves a lot of credit, too. And you don't really hear that as much. Everybody talks about how the Gase is a great fit and blah, 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 which is true. But Jay, I think, deserves a lot of credit.
But it's trust. If you don't have trust between Dow Loggins, the quarterback coach, and Adam Gase and Jay Cutler, the message sometimes can fall on a deaf ear. So you have to have that trust that you're being told is the correct thing.
So lastly, with John Fox here, and it's going to be a very busy offseason, you are very tuned in not only to the draft, and we always love your draft analysis because it's informed and you're talking to the right people, but the free agent process now and John Fox and his ability to bring guys in because he's John Fox. Players love John Fox. He's got an unbelievable reputation throughout the league, and those who've played for him, I believe, also help him maybe get guys in here to give them the thumbs up, yeah, this is a man you want to play for. Do you see that? Do you hear that from the national perspective because you also have a lot of national ties?
Yeah, you know, I think that probably works more with assistant coaches. He's able to get his kind of assistant coaches in here. When guys leave, he could replace them with guys who are at the very top of the business. Players tend to go where the money is, and I think when you're talking about playmakers, they will go wherever they get the biggest paycheck. The other area where I think he will have an advantage in recruiting is maybe the one-year minimum guys, the veterans. Like this year, they got someone like Tracy Porter. They got a bunch of them, a lot of them who have done pretty well for the Bears, too. So, you know, those kinds of players might say, yeah, I want to be a part of what John Fox is doing. But ultimately, this team needs to go out and make some splashes, I think, in free agency. And I'm not a big free agency proponent.
Neither am I.
But you need to get playmakers on this team, and they have the wherewithal to do it in terms of cap space, in terms of money, and I think they need to go out and do it.
We'll be busy following that all offseason, that's for sure. All right, we got to go. Thank you for joining us, Dan Pompey. DanPompey.net, WSCR 670 The Score on Sunday morning on the pregame show. And Mullion Hanley, I guess, also.
And Bleacher Report.
And I mean, he's too busy. Right. He's got a book full of jobs. He's big money. There he is sitting right there. Dan Pompey, everybody. For Tom Thayer and Larry Mayer, I'm Jeff Joniak. Thanks for watching this week's Chicago Bears Roundtable on ChicagoBears.com.